Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Today on the program, we're going to catch up with Monsignor Charles Mangan after his return from spending a few months in Rome. Lots of interesting conversation that we have this morning. Hope you'll stick around for it. Renee Kranz will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings for this Sunday. Emily Leadham with the first and second reading, and Monsignor Charles Mangan doing double duty this morning with the gospel.
A reading from the book of Genesis. The Lord appeared to Abraham by the terebinth of Mamre, and he sat in the entrance of his tent while the day was growing hot. Looking up, Abraham saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he ran from the entrance of the tent to greet them, and bowing to the ground, he said, "Sir, if I may ask you this favor, please do not go on past your servant. Let some water be brought, that you may bathe your feet, and then rest yourselves under the tree. Now that you have come this close to your servant, let me bring you a little food, that you may refresh yourselves, and afterward you may go on your way." The men replied, "Very well, do as you have said." Abraham hastened into the tent and told Sarah, "Quick, 3 measures of fine flour, knead it and make rolls." He ran to the herd, picked out a tender, choice steer, and gave it to a servant, who quickly prepared it. Then Abraham got some curds and milk, as well as the steer that had been prepared, and set those before the three men. And he waited on them under the tree while they ate. They asked Abraham, "Where is your wife Sarah?" He replied, "There in the tent." One of them said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah will then have a son." The word of the Lord. A reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Colossians. Brothers and sisters, now I rejoice in my sufferings for your sake, and in my flesh I am filling up what is lacking in the afflictions of Christ on behalf of his body, which is the church, of which I am a minister in accordance with God's stewardship given to me, to bring to completion for you the word of God, the mystery hidden from ages and from generations past. But now it has been manifested to his holy ones, to whom God chose to make known the riches of the glory of this mystery among the Gentiles. It is Christ in you, the hope for glory. It is he whom we proclaim, admonishing everyone and teaching everyone with all wisdom, that we may present everyone perfect in Christ. The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus entered a village where a woman whose name was Martha welcomed him. She had a sister named Mary who sat beside the Lord at his feet, listening to him speak. Martha, burdened with much serving, came to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me by myself to do the serving? Tell her to help me." The Lord said to her in reply, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and worried about many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, and it will not be taken from her." The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Renee Kranz.
Women of all ages shared a day of inspiration and prayer during the Women's Conference in June. They were treated to keynote speeches from Jennifer Fulweiler and Barbara Heil, a special lunch, breakout sessions to learn more about their faith, and shopping throughout the day. Mass, adoration, and confession provided opportunities to deepen their relationship with the Father to whom they offered their day. The conference was sponsored by the Adult Discipleship and Evangelization and Marriage and Family and Respect Life offices of the Sioux Falls Diocese. Once settled in the United States, refugee youth are free to pursue happiness, and sometimes it's the simplest kind that can make a difference. Through a new partnership between Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of Louisville and the Louisville City Football Club, a professional soccer club, refugee youth are finding joy in a familiar pastime. Professional soccer players are providing clinics for refugee children enrolled in Catholic Charities' youth summer program at the agency's St. Anthony campus. The summer program aims to help youth newcomers learn English and prepare for school. Guatemala's bishops criticized the idea of the country entering into an agreement with the U.S. government to deem it a safe third country for asylum seekers. The country's constitutional court stopped President Jimmy Morales from declaring Guatemala a safe third country with a July 14th decision. Signing such an agreement would have meant migrants traveling through Guatemala and wishing to seek asylum in the United States would be required to do so in Guatemala. In a statement issued July 13th, the Guatemalan bishops expressed their enormous concern over the consequences of such an agreement. The court decision prompted Morales to postpone a summit in Washington, where he was expected to meet with President Donald Trump and sign the Safe Third Country Agreement. The Pew Research Center's annual report on restrictions on religion worldwide showed the United States had the worst scores in the Americas in three of the eight categories Pew surveyed. The U.S. scores in five of the eight categories examined by Pew were worse than they were in 2007, the first year Pew started researching the subject. On a scale where zero is best and 10 is worst, the U.S. score on individual and social group hostilities soared from 3.3 in 2007 to 8.4 in 2017, the most recent year studied. That qualified as the highest in the region. Also ranked as worst in the Americas were the U.S. scores on limits on religious activity, which jumped in the decade from 1.9 to 6.7, and hostilities by organized groups, which rose from 2.8 to 5.8. While not qualifying as a regional worst, the U.S. score on hostilities related to religious norms, which had been zero in 2007, ran up to four by 2017. As the Catholic Church in Chile continues to deal with the fallout of clerical sexual abuse and its cover-up, the Chilean government passed a law removing the statute of limitations on sex abuse crimes against children. The new law, which passed the Chilean Congress July 6th, ensures that there will be no time limit in prosecuting cases regarding the kidnapping or abduction of a minor, as well as the torture, unlawful coercion, or cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, and all that occurs during an act of rape, carnal access to a minor, statutory rape, or other sexual offenses. With all the news a Catholic can use, I'm Renee Kranz with the Bishop's Bulletin.
Very good, Renee. Thanks for the news. Let's move on to our interview. This morning on Catholic Views, we welcome back to the microphone of Monsignor Charles Mangan. And Monsignor, we did a nice conversation with you before you left for Rome this winter, and now you're back, and it's summertime. And a lot's happened in between that we're going to, I hope, have a chance to talk about this morning.
Thanks so much for the invitation, Jerry.
It's always great to have you back. Monsignor, of course, is the director of the Marian Apostolate for the Diocese of Sioux Falls and does, you know, all kinds of other things as well. In fact, your whole purpose, I think, in going back to Rome was to work on finishing some degree that you had gotten very close to before, but hadn't quite finished.
Yes, exactly. I had been in Rome some years ago. Bishop Carlson at the time sent me to Rome to study Mariology, which mm-hmm. is the study of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And so I completed a lot of the work, but as it turned out, because of then going to the Vatican to work in the Office for Consecrated Life, that pretty much at that moment stifled working on the dissertation. So I had been in discussion with Bishop Swain, and he thought it would be a good idea to go back. So I spent, it was about 4 months and 3 weeks there in Rome this past semester from February to June, and it was truly a blessing. Having been in Rome a long time myself, it's always great to be back. Rome doesn't change a lot, I would think you'd have to say. Though stores here, something closes, something opens, some traffic patterns will change, but the buildings are just there. The yeah. building we lived in at the Casa Santa Maria for the American priests who study in Rome, built around 1600. Mm-hmm. So it's just a very different reality and a very different mentality in terms of building and maintaining buildings than what we're used to here.
And say a word, if you will. I think I've mentioned it before in this program, but there's a special connection for the Diocese of Sioux Falls and the chapel at the Casa Santa Maria.
Yes, there are several bishops who were consecrated bishops in that chapel, one of whom is Bishop Mahoney mm-hmm. from the Diocese of Sioux Falls, who would have been our third bishop. He, you know, that's such an incredible chapel at the Casa Santa Maria.
Yeah.
And to think that one of our bishops was made a bishop there, is just always just tugged on me when I walked in there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big plaque and several other bishops, Cardinal Mooney from Detroit and several others. It's really very beautiful.
I had the exact same feeling that you did. I had the privilege of visiting there in 2010, I guess it was, when we were there. And it was quite emotional, actually, to know that one of our bishops in that very space had been consecrated.
Yes, and also to think that we've had a number of priests who have been there. And then let's not forget, Jerry, but previous to the early 50s, that was the North American College, where the seminarians now are. They're at the so-called Hill,
yeah,
which is right near St. Peter's. But we had seminarians who were there at the Casa Santa Maria just right after World War II,
mm-hmm,
and before. And then priests who have gone back for graduate study. So a long connection with the diocese.
Yeah, yeah. And those are the beautiful things about Rome, aren't they? Like you said, so much that's so permanent or seemingly permanent that there's a, I don't know, there's something very special about that.
There really is. The thing about Rome is that the joke always is that while we think in terms of years, Rome thinks in terms of centuries.
Yeah.
And there's some truth into that. You know, change probably does come somewhat slow for the city. And as we know in the church, tradition is such an important part of the church that obviously things have to be pondered a long time, mulled over, considered. This, I think, is it's a good lesson for all of us to take seriously what it is that we believe and somehow apply that to our lives.
And what a challenge that is in the world that we live in, where everything is instantaneous and we're supposed to, you know, make snap decisions about all these things. We live in a Twitter world where, you know, people are firing back and forth at each other, often not very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And this can be a lesson to us to slow down maybe and to take a measure of something before we respond.
I really think that's true. And, you know, as we know, there is something to be said, very much said, for pondering, contemplating, mulling over, praying before we reply. Now, sometimes things are so instantaneous we do have to reply quickly, but sometimes we do better by taking some time.
Yeah. Well, we sort of interrupted your tale, got talking about the place and some of the affiliations with it. But your purpose, again, was to work towards further study of Mariology.
That's right. And I have a very fine director with whom I'm working, and the plan is for a study of the Mariology or the Marian theology of St. John Fisher, who was a great martyr,
mm-hmm,
in the time of King Henry VIII in England. So that puts us around the year 1535, or approximately before, and then the results after. But St. John Fisher and St. Thomas More, whom the church celebrates every June 22nd, are great examples of faithfulness in the midst of incredible tribulation.
Yeah, and I didn't know, I guess, that there was a particular affinity for John Fisher.
Yes. I think you would say, and this is my initial reaction after having studied, and perhaps as I go on, I'll change this reaction, but I think you would say that St. John Fisher was very solidly within the tradition of the church's teaching on Mary. I'm not sure that he necessarily innovated anything. He certainly didn't cancel anything. But I think he's just another voice in a long continuum of what the church has taught about Mary. For example, he uses the word Mary as the mediatrix, the one through whom the graces of God comes. He talked about Mary in a very poetic way as the dawn which precedes the sun. And of course, we would say, well, Mary precedes Christ the Son, at least in terms of human life, not in terms of obviously, eternity. Christ was always, mm-hmm, in the bosom of his Father as the Son of God. But it's great to look at those things and to know that although our time is very different 500 years later, the church's teaching has not changed. It's deepened, it's broadened, but it's not changed or different in that regard.
I think about Mary's role in a sense as a protector, certainly of us and of the faith, and thinking about John Fisher and the time of he and Thomas More, what an important role Mary probably had to play in all of that.
Yes. You know, both suffered so much. We can only imagine that they were very dedicated to her and venerated her with great love. Interestingly, St. John Fisher wrote a commentary on what we call the penitential psalms. And Psalm 37 is really where he sets his sight on the figure of the Blessed Virgin Mary. As you know, Jerry, we're coming up very soon, within 15 years or so, to the 500th anniversary of the martyrdom of Saints John Fisher and Thomas More. And I can only hope that as the time goes on, we will relook at these figures who are tremendous examples for the life of the church.
Well, it sounds like you might have a say in that.
I hope that in some humble way, we might be able to propose something, you know, for that.
That's great. That's great. So that was kind of your main work while you were there. I know you also kept up with some of your work here. And, you know, I guess thanks to technology, you can do some of that now.
Yes. In fact, I contribute once a month to what you put together, which is the special newsletter that goes out to those who are working in our diocese, be they priests or religious, consecrated or laypersons. And then we try to keep certain things going, like the rosaries we have, especially when May comes, mm-hmm. which we do in the garden, Mother's Garden here at Cathedral. But I'm always open to other places in the diocese. If somebody is listening and would like to do something, please do contact me. But yes, you try to keep things going.
Yeah, and it just I'd put that plug in for you. If your parish is looking for a nice little event, a speaker, maybe a mini retreat or an evening of prayer, boy, Monsignor can do a great job for you.
Well, it's wonderful, and I was just called the other day by Father Jeff Norfolk, who is at St. Rose of Lima in Gerritsen, and I'm going out there to do something. So it's a marvelous thing, and I never know from week to week what the request might be.
Yeah, there you go. It's good to be flexible, right?
It really is.
The obedience thing comes right into play. In the time away, one of the things that you and I have done over the years is commented on things that happen in the church, and certainly there's been a lot going on. We're not going to try to cover everything this morning, but some really interesting things. And you mentioned this before we started about Archbishop Fulton Sheen, now venerable.
Yes.
Archbishop Fulton Sheen, right?
Yes. He is venerable, which means that the Pope has recognized that Bishop Sheen displayed virtue to a heroic degree when he was living. And now that that was done and the Holy Father just recognized a miracle that was attributed to Bishop Sheen, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, recognized it as being credible. Now this opens the door for the beatification of Fulton Sheen. This has been, he died 40 years ago this year on December 7th. And the story was always that he prayed for three things: that he might die on the Feast of Our Lady, on a Saturday, and in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament. And he died on the 7th of December, which was a Saturday that year, which was the day right before the vigil of the Immaculate Conception in his chapel, before the Blessed Sacrament. So, well, what a gift.
Yeah.
What a true gift.
Yeah, absolutely. He's such a fascinating character. I'm old enough to remember seeing him on television.
Yes.
My parents were faithful watchers of his show, and he was such a striking figure.
Yes.
And a marvelous teacher.
Yes, with a great voice and truly a great intellect, but somebody who could take complicated tasks and complicated themes and really put them across that all of us could understand. And I think that was really, he could popularize, perhaps we could say, mm-hmm. Some of the great teachings of the faith and do it with so much sincerity, and even the theater part of it too. You know, he was very
kind of a flair for the dramatic.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Flair for the dramatic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's something. So I know one of the things that happens when somebody is being in this process towards beatification or canonization eventually, perhaps, is a thorough review of what they have written, what they have said. I can't imagine the process for somebody like Archbishop Fulton Sheen, who was writing and speaking constantly.
Yes, I know it was said that up to 1970, he had had 64 books in print, and he would live another 9 years, and I think he did his autobiography, Treasure in Clay, which is a wonderful read. If folks would like to see that, can find that easily, Treasure in Clay. But so many great things. I mean, he could just put these things out, and oftentimes, you know, year after year after year.
And Monsignor, maybe say a bit about why even now what he taught, how he taught, is important to us. I think there's still a lot to gain from it, isn't there?
I do, too. It's true, once again, that his the period of time is not exactly in every respect like our own time, but there are so many similarities. We think of his time during World War II, the threat of war. Today, we have many threats of war. And we've lived through various wars. I think also he would have us remember this battle for the soul. He very much spoke a lot about communism and also spoke a lot about materialism. And forgetting, look, what about the dignity which each of us has as a member of the body of Christ? And certainly in our time period when life has been so cheapened, his thought really resonates.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something to watch going forward. And maybe good preparation is to read some of his works. I know you can still find some of the television programs.
Yes.
They're still available. And so might not be a bad exercise for someone.
I think that's so true. I have watched a number of things he's done online. And if you do a little search, you can find many, many things.
Yeah. All right. Well, what else in this five-month period since you and I have had a conversation on this radio program, what else has really kind of caught your attention or maybe something that you think we ought to maybe spend a little time talking about?
Well, Jerry, of course, here in our diocese, we continue to think about our own Bishop Swain.
Yeah.
And the fact that he is now 75 years of age and some months after that. Knowing that right now in the United States there are many places that need bishops, and of course many of our listeners no doubt have heard that the Bishop of Rapid City has moved to Saginaw, Michigan. So to have the state, you know, in that right now reality of needing two bishops is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it's been true at some point. You'd have to look that up, but I think that is a fascinating thing. But also many of our listeners know Bishop Kettler. He's getting close to 75. Many will remember Archbishop Chaput when he was in Rapid City. He's getting to 75. And, of course, Archbishop Carlson, who was with us in Sioux Falls, who's now in St. Louis, two weeks ago, reached his 75th birthday. So I guess it tells us that we must pray to the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. And everybody asks, well, when, you know, and again, it's not ours to know. It's
no.
Not ours to do,
right?
But it is ours to pray.
Absolutely. And I was with one of the parishes, a couple of the parishes on the weekend, and they prayed the prayer for a new bishop. So that was a tremendous thing. And I really, really liked that and appreciated that. But it's this great trust that we want to have in the Lord that He provides for His people.
Yeah.
He always has. And the process of naming a bishop is, I think for good reason, it's rather guarded, and probably a lot of good reasons for that. But also there can be a certain outreach asking for opinion, you know, what a particular diocese might need at a particular time.
Yeah.
But we certainly pray for Bishop Swain and whomever his successor will be.
And don't think anyone that Bishop Swain has gone away. He's here. He's working. He's our bishop.
Yes, he is our bishop. And for example, I know many of our people, including my mother, see him every Sunday on the television mass, and many so appreciate his presence.
He's very faithful to that.
Yes,
and,
he is.
It's been a wonderful ministry, and somehow I hope that continues. Well, it will continue in some fashion or another.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, all right. A couple minutes left this morning. Certainly, there's lots else that's gone on in these last few months, and this isn't the last time you and I are going to have a conversation. I think there's been a couple of new documents that have come out since we talked last.
Yes. As a matter of fact, there is a document in preparation for the synod in the Amazon.
In the Amazon, right.
And that has attracted a lot of attention because of the concern of where will priests come from.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting how that will go. We don't know. But we should certainly commit ourselves to praying for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that, I hear about some of what goes on there in terms of the dire need for priests and the length of time that people go without receiving the sacraments. And it reminds me a bit of perhaps the early days in South Dakota when the priests were itinerant and got to people as they were able to.
Yes.
Probably not unlike that.
I would say the same. And I know here in our diocese certainly was not unusual to not have Mass for a month, and perhaps in the winter it might be two or three.
Yeah. So there is a lot to pray for,
yes.
for certainly for them, and a reminder perhaps again that we are part of this universal church. We are brothers and sisters with all Catholics.
Yes, and no one of us can rest on his laurels and think, well, we have sufficient numbers of vocations. And certainly we know the pinch is always there, mm-hmm. to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely so. Well, Monsignor, great to catch up a little bit, to spend a little time and talk again. It won't be the last time we do this, especially now that you're back home. We're grateful to have you back home. And again, if folks are interested in Monsignor coming to your parish, talk to your pastor and see what's possible, huh?
Absolutely. I would look forward to it.
All right. And I know you do retreats, too, around the country. You probably still got some of those going on, too.
Yes, I do. And doing a retreat for the Legion of Mary in Texas coming up, and also for some sisters in Rockford, Illinois.
All right. Very good. Monsignor Charles Mangan, thanks for being with us this
You're
morning.
You're welcome, Jerry.
Always good to catch up with Monsignor Mangan. Appreciate his knowledge and his willingness to help us understand things, particularly things related to Mary. Always grateful for that.
Yes.
Renee, I know you've been working on the next edition of the Bishop's Bulletin. Can we give people a little preview?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
We have a great feature about addiction and faith coming up. A bit of after photos from Camp Sydney and discipleship camps. And some previews of the upcoming Bishop's Cup and Taste the Goodness.
You better get ready. August 1st, it'll be in your mailbox or shortly thereafter. That's our time for Catholic Views this morning. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back on Sunday.